Hi, my name is Kate Gregory. I'm doing a series of screencasts on building awesome Windows 7 applications. In this one, I want to show you how MFC provides easy access to the taskbar functionality in Windows 7. I'm going to focus on jump lists and overlays. It's completely native code, and we're using the new MFC capabilities. You're welcome to email me about this or anything related. My email address is here. I ask, please put something like MFC and taskbar in the subject line so I know it's because of this. You can also see my blog, and you're welcome to follow me on Twitter. Now, before we dive into the code for jump lists, let's get a little terminology sorted out. Jump lists show you two completely different things, and they have different underlying Windows architecture in them. One set of things on a jump list, the top set, are the destinations. Now, some apps don't have any. And the other, which are underneath if they're both there, are the tasks. And again, some apps don't have any. You can think of destinations as nouns. Very often, they're documents that the application can open. The architectural thing that happens with Windows is when you choose a destination, Windows will launch another copy of the application and pass it that destination as a command line parameter. So if it's a file path, it'll open it. So think about that. If you're on Word, you right-click, get the jump list, choose that letter you wrote last week, you'll get another copy of Word open to that letter. So if you had three copies open, now you have four. If you didn't have any copies of Word open at all, but you had it pinned on the taskbar, you'll get your first copy of Word. If you have Notepad open and you bring up its jump list and you choose some text document, you'll get another copy of Notepad and so on. If you see an application that doesn't appear to do that, they're either not destinations or they've got some code to, for example, prevent a second instance from being launched. Tasks will launch any exe, not just the app you're already running. Originally, the assumption was that task would be for a different exe. So you might launch Notepad with the readme.txt open. You might launch Internet Explorer with the support page loaded. Or if you have a suite of related applications, you might launch other applications in the suite. If there's a particular utility that you know is really important to your users, you might launch that utility. People have stretched the task architecture a little bit. And most of the applications now that I look at their tasks, they actually launch a copy themselves and communicate with themselves. But the architecture from Windows' point of view is real simple. It's a different exe, or doesn't have to be the same exe, that is launched when people choose the task. Now we have subdivisions within the destinations and the tasks. At the very top of all the destinations are the pinned ones, and only the user can pin a destination. They always show up at the top, whether you have used them recently or not. So if I bring up the jump list for, say, Visual Studio, you can see some solutions that I've opened recently. And if I wanted to pin, say, the Hilo solution, I could click this, and now it would be pinned, and it would always appear there, and I could open it any time, even if it had been a while since I most recently opened it. I'm going to unpin it just to kind of keep my jump list as I expect it to be. Beneath that, we have known categories, either recent or frequent. You can choose in code which you want. And it's simply a matter of the understanding the usage pattern of your users. You get recent or frequent pretty much for free. If you use the common file dialogs in Windows for your opening, part of what they do is update that list of recently used, and that will keep your recent and your frequent up to date for you. The only time you're going to have a problem with this is if for some reason you're not going through those dialogs or handling opens in the usual way so that the shell, Windows, isn't aware that you're opening these files. That was a problem with some older versions of Visual Studio, for example. And there's a relatively simple way to add to the recent if you have to. Best bet, use the common file dialogs, then you get it for free. Now, people often ask me, what can I do in code to pin a document? And the answer is nothing. You cannot pin a destination. That's entirely the user's choice to pin or to unpin. And then they tell me this story about why the rule shouldn't apply to them, you know, like it's a real important document. And I get it. It often is. Say, for example, your application is used by people who open some sort of blank or template and fill things in and then submit it. Maybe it's expense accounts. Maybe it's purchase orders. Doesn't really matter. You'd want them to be able to get to those blanks and templates easily, even if it's been a while since they've opened one. But you're just asking the wrong question. Instead of asking the question, how can I pin something, where the answer is you can't, ask the question, how can I make sure that important documents are always in the jump list, even if the user didn't choose to pin them? Ah, that you can do, and it's called a custom category. So here on this screenshot, our custom category is called important. You can call it blanks or templates or starting points or whatever you like, and you can again encode, add whatever documents you like into that category, and they will always be on the jump list even if the user didn't choose to put them there. So that's how you can get your starting points onto the jump list. Now for the tasks, you have several parts to a task in addition to the destination kind of aspect of saying, well, here's what I want you to launch. You have the exe that you want to launch. You possibly have an icon symbol that you want. The icon's always the document icon for destinations, but it's whatever you like for tasks. And you can pass a command line argument to the executable that you're launching, which is great because you may want to, as I say, open Notepad with the README or Internet Explorer with the support site. And then finally, you can have whatever text you like. It doesn't have to be the path to an exe. You can have nice descriptive text for your task. The top two tasks in this screenshot were added in code. The bottom three you get for free from Windows: to close the app, to pin or unpin it from the taskbar, or to launch another instance of the app if that's what you happen to want. So I'm going to show you some sample code in MFC that will walk you through interacting with the jump list. And the starting point for this demo is some code from a lab that you can find on Channel 9 in the part of the Windows 7 training kit. Got the URL here, so you can pause and type in that really long URL, or you could just search for Channel 9 MFC taskbar, and that would also take you right to it. And that's where you can get the code from if you want to follow along. So I have this project open in Visual Studio, and I also have it running. And one of the things that demos tend to do, which you should never do in real life, is to give you UI to let you play around with things that should really be hard-coded decisions. It's just an artifact of a demo. I could write out the single hard-coded line. I said you can switch between recent and frequent. I could just have a line of code in the app that says, I want recent. And then I could go in there and edit it so that it says, I want frequent, build it, run it, and ta-da, frequent. But typing, building, and running take time. It's much quicker to say, hey, let's play around with it on the UI. Let's have a drop-down where people can choose recent versus frequent, and then they can immediately see the effects of what they did. It's great for demoing and for showing you what's happening. I don't want you to take away from this that you should let users choose. I think that would be terrible. You're the designer of your application. You decide whether you're going to have any destinations at all, and if you are, whether they're going to be recent or whether they're going to be frequent or what. So let's take a look at this app the way it's running right now. It has three items recent, and these are all JPEGs that I've opened with this application. And it's kind of a strange app. When you open things, it doesn't display them or do anything useful like that. You can't tell that it's opened them, but it does end up adding them into the jump list. So I can switch this to frequent if I want. I click this button. Now, the way that the jump list mechanism works, you build it in your code, and then when you've made all the changes you want, you commit it. You don't want to be in a situation where you're halfway through adding things in and someone gets like a half-built jump list. So I have to click this commit button, and then you'll see that now we have frequent instead of recent. And the files are pretty much still coming out in the same order because there's only three files and I sort of wander around opening one or the other of them all the time. But I can switch it back to recent, and then I'll open the one that's at the bottom right now, which is Goodbye Barcelona, and we'll see it jump up to the top. So I'll open a nice picture of Barcelona from TechEd Europe when it was there, and when I now you see it at the top because it's the most recent image that I've opened with the application. Okay, how do we in code switch back and forth between recent and frequent so that you can choose one of those lines and have it in your code? Let's just go to the handler for this button. And you'll see that we're calling a method called addKnownCategory, and it's taking an instance of this enum, known destination category enum, and it's got frequent, and as you can see down here, it's got recent. And this addKnownCategory is a method of this jump list member variable. If we go take a look at the jump list, it's a member variable of the class jump list tab, and it's of type cJumpList. Okay, where did CJump list come from? Well, CJump list is part of MFC. You can see it's defined here in AFX ADV.h. So if you're using the latest MFC, you get CJump list, which does all kinds of cool stuff, for free. So that's why we can call its add known category. Now, I mentioned committing. You have to remember to click that button when you're playing with this demo, and in your own code, you have to remember to call commit list, which actually puts your changes into the real jump list in the shell, as opposed to just in the object that you're working with locally. So that's how simple it is to switch back and forth between recent and frequent. You just call add known category and then call commit list. Now let's try a custom category. Again, something that you would never put into your UI. You would write this out. What I would typically do is you have some sort of a configuration in the registry or in a config file or somewhere that says, here's where we keep templates. And you go and look there. And if there are five files there, you sort of enumerate through them and add each of them in as a destination so that all of the templates are there in the templates category. What we're doing here is just letting you type whatever category you want and then browsing to a file. Let's choose one that's not already in the recent list. I'll take this one from TechEd 2004. And then I'll add that in as a destination and commit. And now you see we have this category public with this one item in it. So very simple for you to do. Let's go and take a look at the handler for that. Not surprisingly, it's basically a line of code. There's some error checking, making sure that you've typed things in. But then we just call this add destination of the jump list, and that takes care of adding in our destination. You notice two parameters, the category and the path. So you want to add five things under template, there'd be five calls where it's template, 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 template. Now let's think for a minute about tasks. Most applications display either tasks or destinations. It's kind of unusual to display both. The other thing you need to know about tasks is that they display even if the app isn't running. So if you take a look at PowerPoint, it's just destinations, various slideshows I've had open recently. And if you take a look at Outlook, we have new email, new appointment, and so on, and no destinations because most of us have like one file, you know, local.pst or whatever. These tasks, if I choose one, it'll have to launch an instance of Outlook in order to actually send the email, and I'm probably fine with that. Most applications show either tasks or destinations, but not both. However, that's not any requirement of the Windows architecture. You can add them both if you want to. So here in our little demo, we can add a task, and there are quite a few bits and pieces to a task. So let's say we wanted to launch an empty notepad for whatever reason. I'll give it a title, like empty notepad. And we need the URL, and it's just simpler to browse to it than to successfully type the path to notepad from memory. However, I am going to copy that because I'm going to need it in a minute. So there's the path to notepad in here. The arguments, if there was some file I wanted to open, I'd put in the full file path to that file. Now the reason I saved the path was for the icon. Now you don't always want to use the icon of the XE you're using. So if you're launching Notepad, you might not want to use a Notepad icon. If you didn't know, the icons are embedded inside the executables for any executable. Certainly if you're launching Internet Explorer to your support site, you don't want to use the Internet Explorer icon. You probably want to use a little mini version of your own logo or a question mark for help or something like that. Here I'm going to use the Notepad icon. I'm going to say I want icon 0, which is obviously the first one in the file. So if we add that task and remember to commit it and then right click, see we have a task called empty notepad, and if I choose it, I get as advertised an empty notepad. If instead I had filled in the full path to some README, it would launch that as its command line argument and so on. You can have as many tasks as you like, and they should be relevant, make sense to the application that you're creating. So the code for adding the task basically just needs to pull all those pieces together, so we make sure they're all there, and then we just call this add task method of the jump list, the path, the arguments, the title, the icon path, and the icon index. And away you go. You can also have separators in your task. This copy of the UI doesn't have the code to add them on a button, but I'll just show you that we have this add task separator method on jump lists. So if you wanted to have three tasks and then a separator and then another three tasks, super easy to do. You just do it exactly like that. And don't forget to call commit list after you've built up the UI that you want in terms of all your destinations and in terms of all your tasks. Just repeating some of the code here to make it easy to get to. You can see the add known category method on the jump list, the add destination category on the jump list, and the add task on the jump list, as well as add task separator. Now the other half of the story is the taskbar overlays. This particular app has again, UI to let you choose your overlays. This is something that you would not do. You would have overlays appear on your icon, typically as part of an event handler. So Outlook puts a little image of a mail message on the icon when you're running and you have new messages that you haven't read. This Twitter client, MetroTwit, puts a little icon of a number. And this is pretty clever. If you want to show people how many new messages there are, you actually just make icons that represent the numbers 1, 2, however many you feel like, and then this one goes plus when there's more than that. And you simply put the right icon on according to how many unread or unhandled events or messages or whatever your app has to show. So this app, because it's a demo, just has some hard-coded choices. So when I click this blue, we get a blue overlay icon down on here. These show up better if I don't have focus. Let me just give Visual Studio focus. I think you can see that info button a little better. I could put a green question mark or the sound off symbol. That one really doesn't show well over the MFC icon, but it's just a choice of what your icon is. And this particular button turns the overlays off. In terms of how they're done, they're all pretty much the same. Basically, you get a hold of your mainframe by calling getMainWind and casting it. And assuming you got one, it has a method called setTaskbarOverlayIcon. And you'll notice that this is a resource within my application. So if I open up icons, you can see that I have the info, the no volume, and the question as resources within this project. The parameter here, This second parameter here is alternate text, not your job to figure out how to display it. For people who can't see, Windows will get this information to them. It's not your problem, but remember, don't try to describe your icon, right? You shouldn't be saying question mark on a green background or I on a blue background. Instead, say what it's supposed to mean, like info or question. And to get no icon, good old null will be our friend. We'll pass in 0, cast to an icon handle, and an empty string, and that will take our overlay away. The other thing that I like to overlay on my taskbar is the progress bar. This has made such a difference to me with a number of applications that I use that take a while to do things. In fact, I've installed a Visual Studio 2010 extension that adds a progress bar for slow builds so that I can watch my build without having to have Visual Studio in the foreground. And there are a number of things, copies, downloads, take a while and you want to keep an eye on them. And that progress bar that's right down here overlaid in the taskbar is fantastic for that. We have a completely unrealistic taskbar here that you can control with a slider. Okay, but it proves the point and lets us see what's going on. Now I find they don't show up very well when the app has focus like this because of that white highlight. So if I give Visual Studio focus, now I think you'll see that that progress bar down here shows up a lot crisper. One of the fun things about the taskbar progress bars is that they come in multiple colors. So I can switch it to paused, which is yellow, or to error, which is red, or to indeterminate. I normally detest indeterminate progress bars, but that is kind of a cool effect, whizzing by all Star Trek-y in the background through my icon. By the way, when you are testing this out yourself, if you don't see overlays of either icons or progress bars, it's probably because you're not using large icons on your taskbar. I notice most C++ people are really devout, small icon people. They want every pixel. I find the icon overlays and the progress bar overlays so useful that I have permanently switched to large icons on my taskbar, and I strongly recommend that you do too. Now, how does this progress bar get set? Again, let's just take a look at the handler for this choice when you're choosing the drop-down. We have, again, get a hold of our mainframe, and it has a method set progress bar state. And you can see the enum, that's taskbar progress flag, normal, error, paused, indeterminate, and no progress. As for the position, that's in our hscroll handler, and we just call set progress bar position. Done. So, very simple, one line of code really to set the color of your progress bar, one line of code to set the position of your progress bar, you're done. And the user is getting that feedback down in their taskbar so that your application can be completely in the background and they can still see what's going on. It's great. Just repeating the code, set taskbar overlay icon, set progress bar state, and set progress bar position. All three of these are on your mainframe. So get a hold of that, cast it appropriately, you're good to go. For an MFC developer, putting taskbar integration into your application is literally about a total of 10 lines of code if you really, really dress it up with the maximum possible bling. You get your recent frequent destinations on the jump list for free. You can add one line of code to choose whether you want recent or frequent. You can add templates or blanks or starting points with a couple of lines of code to add those destinations. You can add tasks, set overlay icons, shadow your progress bars down in the taskbar. Very, very simple things to do, and MFC turns these into one and two line operations. There's really no reason not to do them. So I encourage you to update your MFC applications today to make them look, feel, and act like Windows 7 applications, like your users are going to expect them to do so. Give it a try.